For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Is it time for the conservative movement to do a lot of self-reflection and say, okay, where are we right now and who are we right now and what do we want to accomplish and where do we go from here? Well, maybe. I mean, honestly, it's not a bad idea to do that on a regular basis, no matter who or what you are, personally or corporately. But when you look at the Conservative Political Action Conference over the weekend, there was a very small turnout compared to what CPAC used to be. A lot of factors involved with that, but does it say anything about the conservative movement in general or just about the CPAC organization? Hey, good morning. I'm Mike Ferguson. Thanks for making News Talk STL part of your morning. Really good coverage of this on redstate.com. And Jennifer O'Connell from Red State joined us on Monday's program to kind of look back at what happened at CPAC. I mean, yeah, we've talked about the content a lot and the speakers and the candidates, but what about the fact that there were far fewer people there and far fewer sponsors there than there have been in years past? Well, here's Jennifer's take. Here's what she had to say. Good article, as always, in redstate.com says CPAC 2023 was not well attended. Here's why conservatives are leaving this conference in the dust. It was written by Jennifer O'Connell, who's with us right now. And Jennifer, first of all, appreciate you being on the program. So obviously you saw the same thing I did. I'm looking at the video and I'm looking at the cameras or the pictures. And I'm going, man, that looks different. There are some empty seats there, and that's not what CPAC used to be. Used to be couldn't fit another person into CPAC. What does it look like the numbers were this past event?
According to reports, there were 4,000. Good morning. Thanks for having me, by the way. In the reports that I received, about 4,000 actually registered for the event, and apparently they counted approximately 2,200 who actually came. And those aren't hard numbers. That's just what I heard through the grapevine. So, but still, even that report is pretty abysmal when almost half of your attendance people who signed up did not show up.
Yeah.
So, the energy, you can tell the energy was just not one of the photos that was presented by someone there. Was the hall before Trump came to speak. And there was a packed house in Florida both times, and I was there both times, when Trump came out to speak. You couldn't get through the door after a certain time, lines around the block. So this is kind of interesting and kind of sad that the hall has all of these empty seats when former President Trump normally draws in great crowds.
So what are the variables? Do we know, or is this the question that we need to be asking to see if there's a bigger picture involved here?
I think questions need to be asked, and you know, there is a bigger picture involved. I think as much as the Republican Party wants to play a cohesive front, conservatives are fractionated from the Republican Party and the establishment and really all things D.C. There's a lack of trust. Looking at a jaundiced eye, appreciate that, yeah, we have a much barely Republican majority in the House, but really people are working on the ground in their own localities, their cities, their communities to bring back conservatism, to bring back American values. And frankly, I don't think they feel CPAC speaks to that. And so they're not going to waste their money and their energy going there, especially when there are conferences that exist now that focus in on the local level.
Good morning, Jennifer. This is Stel. A quick question, and I don't mean to be blunt by saying this, but I'm going to come out and say it. Was it a stupid decision to pick D.C. as the site?
I think it was a very stupid decision. I remember in 2022, which was the last one in Florida, one of the reasons why they were taking so long to announce dates and speakers was they were fighting over having it back in District of Columbia. And this was still at the height of all of the pandemic nonsense happening in D.C. and happening in other places. And they ultimately chose Florida again. they should have taken a page from that and just left it there.
Yes.
Understanding that the electorate conservatives, I mean, especially when, you know, half of the blue states, New York, California, are moving to the South and to the Midwest and not paying any attention to these places of power that used to be, you know, what established everything. So, yeah, they made a huge mistake in making that move, factoring in their own egos and their own wanting a seat at the table as opposed to what is happening in conservatism. And what do conservatives want? That's what they should have focused on.
We are visiting with Jennifer O'Connell from RedState.com. If you go right now to RedState.com, her article is right there on the front page. CPAC 2023 was not well attended. Here's why conservatives are leaving this conference in the dust. And let me focus on that word leaving, because we had a lot of talk, you know, around the country as to who's going to be at CPAC. But it's really notable who was not at CPAC. And people talk about Mike Pence and Ron DeSantis, and that's fine, but we're also talking Heritage Foundation, Club for Growth, Turning Point USA, Fox News. There's a lot of organizations that have been pseudo partners, if not full on sponsors for years, who aren't there. Does this go along with that fracture that you were just talking about, Jennifer?
I believe so. Heritage Foundation at least takes a pulse of people in the country and people around the country and recognizes that people aren't very happy with D.C. We need to tone it down, and we also need to start actually positioning ourselves around the country to see what's happening with some of these grassroots movements. That's my issue with CPAC. If you want to say we were the conservative voice, but now we're establishment now, and we're trying to, you know, reach our hands in other places and stay connected to D.C., that would be one thing. But they constantly tout themselves as we are the very first, you know, grassroots, and, you know, they want to play that, but grassroots don't show up. It's all of this establishment stuff, and it used to be some of the think tanks and the voices that mirrored conservatism, but now not anymore. As you said, some of the biggest partners that they used to have decided, you know what, we're going to spend our money elsewhere. We're going to go to Rebuild America. We're going to go to America Fest. They certainly were not at CPAC, as another picture of the exhibitor hall showed. And again, those are normally packed, crammed full of people, even in between the sessions. That was pretty sad.
Is there also a reflection on the Republican Party? Now, CPAC is not an official party event, and I would argue that the conservative movement and the Republican Party don't always overlap, but is there any frustration with the establishment of the Republican Party in this? I mean, we had somebody comment on our a Rumble chat box just a minute ago saying, yeah, you can blame Ron McDaniel for some of this. So how much of this is RNC and Republican Party versus conservative movement in general?
RNC Republican Party is definitely establishment, and the slaps Mercedes and Matt cozy up to them all the time, and so yeah, that's seen as well. Most grassroots people did not want Ronna McDaniel back in. She's back in, sadly. They're really, again, they know Mitch McConnell has nothing to do with them or wants nothing to do with them, and they still, again, look with a jaundiced eye at Kevin McCarthy. You know, it's very much a wait and see. So conservatives are the ones that bring the money, and conservatives are the people that some of these organizations like Heritage, hey, Fox News, trying to keep its conservative cred. Those are the people they want to reach. And so eventually they're going to be smart enough and say, well, we're going to go where they're going, and they're not going to CPAC.
You know, for the choice of the venue, I kept scratching my head wondering, okay, if you're not going to go back to Tampa, because maybe the DeSantis situation may make it awkward because you're in his state, but he's not going to be there. Why not choose Dallas or Nashville or Indianapolis, some other city like that, instead of going into a city like D.C. where, you know, let's be honest here, the memories are not good for D.C.
Right. No, not at all. And again, they're fresh off, dropping pandemic mandates, and then they've passed these stupid laws like illegal aliens voting and committing criminal offenses. So it's like, what that is not an advertisement for come to our city. It really isn't.
No doubt about that. And of course, you just mentioned Matt Schlepp as well. There are some accusations against him. I don't know if they're true or not. I don't know if people change their travel plans for something like that, but it definitely couldn't have helped the mood and the energy there.
No, it didn't. And I don't know anything about the accusations either, whether they're valid or not. That has yet to be played out. But really, just the stain of it on top of everything else does not help the CPAC cause, does not help the CPAC reputation. And people are weary. People are weary of one face being shown and stuff coming out of people's mouths, and then everything else happening in the background. And I think CPAC is kind of a reflection of that as well. You know, after all of this pandemic madness we've gone through, where all of this stuff is being uncovered and people are saying, you know what, we were right all along, and it's being proven. You know, the conferences and the things that they pour their money and their energy into are going to matter more.
Yeah, Jennifer, we just have a minute or so left. I think it's been a good thing when they've had debates before about, okay, who and what is the state of the conservative movement, whether it's, you know, the conservatives debating with libertarians, smaller libertarians, or whatever the case is. You could even go back to, I mentioned earlier in the program, you know, Buckley and Reagan and all these things that are the state of the conservative movement. This is a conference that at one point has had 10,000 attendees on a peak year. Now we're talking about 2,000 to 2,200. Should the conservative movement be taking a self-diagnosis test right now about who and what it is, or is this a matter of the CPAC organization flopping, not necessarily the conservatives? And I don't know the answer to that.
Frankly, my opinion is it's the CPAC organization. I came the first time in 2016, and I've come to about three or four after that, the last being 2021 and 2022. It's the organization. I recognize the calcification in the organization of it must be this way. We must invite these people. We must look this way. And then I went to America Fest, which is sponsored by TPUSA, Charlie Kirk and his organization. And the energy and the vibe, as well as the forward thinking, was there. And I haven't been to any of the smaller conferences, but I'm sure you could say the same going on as well. CPAC as an organization has stopped tapping into conservatism, period, and has stopped looking forward. They follow the heat as opposed to generate the heat. And there's nothing wrong with that. We appreciate what they did and what they established, that they were originally the pulse of what was happening in conservatism. But now they're not anymore. And instead of accepting that and maybe repivoting into something else, they've become calcified and other organizations have taken on their work.
All right. Once again, the article is called CPAC 2023 was not well attended. Here's why conservatives are leaving this conference in the dust. It was written by our guest, Jennifer O'Connell. Just find it at redstate.com. Jennifer, how do people find you? Social media, website, where can people connect with you? I know you got some other projects out there.
AsTheGirlTurns.com. I am AsTheGirlTurns.com is my website, and if you type in AsTheGirlTurns on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Telegram, Rumble, Truth Social, Getter, you will find me.
We've got your News Talk STL Morning News Roundup coming your way here in just about 4 minutes on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. You know, the Biden administration really wants to extract more money from as many Americans as possible. They just don't want to call it a tax increase.
I've noticed that lately, yes.
Yeah. So they're getting very creative about this. I'm going to talk about that at 6:05. Very, very creative about this. And if you say, I don't make $400,000 a year, and the president says it won't affect me. Yeah, it will. Yep, it will.
If you're making tips, yeah, it will.
Oh, that's just one of the ways. Just one of the ways. If you own stuff, that might be another way.
Okay.
No, this is so ridiculous. All right. Also, state control of the St. Louis Police Department, one step closer to reality. And in the 7 o'clock hour, this is a really interesting discussion with very real world applications for somebody you probably know in your life. Should ex-cons be given their right to vote back to them?
Hmm.
fascinating. There's an op-ed that was published in the Springfield News Leader, and I think it's getting published in a couple other places, and it was written by Jeremy Cady from Americans for Prosperity, very conservative, constitutionalist-based organization, and they're making that call. So we'll talk to him a little bit later on the program. All right, I'm Mike Ferguson. It is 5:51. Got Stel Ponticus here. Just a quick reminder. Today is Election Day in the city of St. Louis. Did you know that, Stel?
You know what? I saw something late last night. It didn't dawn on me until I heard that last night.
I suspect that's going to be the case for a lot of people. Same thing with me. I got in this morning, I'm like, oh, yeah, primary election day. And we've been covering it here on the show. But today is that primary election for the new aldermanic wards. And as I'm sure you know, everybody who's part of the News Talk family here, whether you're in St. Louis City or you're in the metro area, the board is being reduced from 28 to 14 seats. Okay. So the top two candidates from each primary will advance to the general election in April. So this is an absolutely crucial day. When you look at the candidates across the board, it's not just that they're St. Louis Democrats, okay? It is that they are extremist across the board, and there are some common sense people who are running, and if they can at least get into the general election, that'll be a big step in the right direction, and then we can, you know, worry about April when April comes around. But you're hearing ads on the air here for Phil Menendez and Matt Catraba. If you want to hear those conversations that we have had with both of those candidates, just go to newstalkstl.com and look up our podcast, or if you already subscribe to our podcast, you can find them real easy. Just do a search and you'll find those. All right. Hey, remember that, you know, we did that segment the other day. It's like, hey, whatever happened to thing? You remember that whole, what do we call it? Chinese spy balloon thing. You remember that was a thing?
What did happen to that?
Yeah, I know. So back in February, just in case people like the media have forgotten, the spy balloon from China was discovered floating over the U.S. It was shot down after floating over most of the country. U.S. Senator Tom Cotton, he is from Arkansas, shared his thoughts on that balloon and on the Biden administration's response to it. This is from Fox's The Ingram Angle.
You continue to see them apologize for and excuse Chinese wrongdoing that threatens American jobs and prosperity and our national security. It's time for Joe Biden to take a firm stand against Chinese communists rather than acting as their de facto lawyer.
Speaking of China, now that we're getting new revelations about how much Chief White House Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci, otherwise known as the science, how much he might have known about the origins of COVID and also apparently tried to cover that up. Fox News' Kevin Cork explains.
New emails uncovered by House Republicans probing the origins of COVID-19 show that Dr. Anthony Fauci had final approval on a scientific paper written back in February of 2020 to disprove the theory that the virus leaked from a lab in Wuhan, China. Furthermore, there's evidence that suggests that Dr. Fauci prompted a professor at Scripps Research to tell the writers of that scientific paper that the goal was to disprove any lab leaks. Not surprisingly, armed with this new information, lawmakers are incensed and demanding answers.
So in other words, Stel, the man who declared that he represents science tried to put his finger on the scale and told everybody, here is the conclusion you will come to, find a way to get there.
Oh, he definitely did put his finger on the scale. Yeah. He and Dr. Francis Collins put their fingers on there. Yes.
Yes. We could also throw Rachel Walensky in that as well.
Dr. Birx. And a couple others.
Yeah. But with Fauci, what's particularly insidious on this is the man who claims we're following the science, we're following the science. The more we learn about his interactions, like I said, he appears to have said, okay, this is the conclusion, which obviously was driven by politics and
money.
CYA and money and everything involved. Here's the conclusion. Find a way to get there because science, because of politics is what this is all about. Because of
power. Mm-hmm. It's money. That's what it's all about. So I'm really glad, and I disagree with some of my my friends around the country on this. I'm glad that when it comes to Fauci, that they are continuing staying on top of him, even though he's out of his position, that he's technically retired. It's embarrassing that Washington University has got him coming to be the keynote speaker at their medical school here in another couple of months. All right, a little more closer to home. Missouri House passed a bill to put the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department back under state control. That bill passed the House on Monday, so it's headed to the Senate. Now, if the state Senate and if the governor also approve the plan, which it looks like they will, a state board of police commissioners would then assume control of the police department this August. I mean, so it would move pretty fast. Now, the mayor of St. Louis, whoever that is at the time, so Tashara Jones right now, would also be on that board along with four appointed state police commissioners. And we'll get into this a little more depth in just a little bit. But let's just say that the mayor's office is not happy with this development. But I think they see the train that's about to roll over them.
I think
down
so.
The track.
Yeah. The light's shining in the tunnel.
Exactly. That's what's going on. And you know, I mean, is it an ideal thing? Is it a good thing that the state would have to take control of a local police department? No, that's not a good thing, but it's what has to be done because so many bad things have happened and because of what's deteriorated. All right, quick updates on sports here. Blues on the road again tonight. They play Arizona at 8 o'clock our time. This one's on ESPN+. Cardinals beat the Astros in spring training ball on Monday. Final score there, 7-1. They will play the Detroit Tigers this afternoon at noon. There is no broadcast of that game, and it appears that there's no streaming of that game either, so I'll just tell you who won a spring training ball tomorrow when once that game's over with. Just ahead here, the Biden administration says we're not raising taxes, or let me do it the way that Joe Biden does. We're not raising taxes. Yeah. On anybody under $400,000 in income, but are they finding creative ways to get around that? Sure looks that way. We'll tell you about it at 6:04.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.